With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice-to-text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not gonna just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out, my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The TrueAge test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. When a college student with her entire life ahead of her went missing from her college campus over Memorial Day weekend in 1996, her family started a search for answers and ultimately justice that would last for the next quarter of a century. While there have been many theories over the years about what exactly happened to Kristen Smart, we have never been as close as we are right this moment to finding answers and bringing some measure of peace to those who love her. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Kristen Smart. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Thank you, everyone, for joining us here for part two in our two-part bonus series on missing Cal Poly student Kristen Smart. Last week, we went over the circumstances of her late-night disappearance from campus and talked about the first 15 years or so of the investigation. This week, we're going to pick up where we left off in 2011 and talk about the huge breaking news that has been happening in this case nearly every day for the past couple of weeks.
I did my best to avoid finding out what happened.
Uh-huh.
So, but I think I did catch a headline.
Yeah, they were pretty hard to avoid in the past couple of weeks because this case is huge. I mean, again, 25 years and, you know, they've had a suspect identified that entire time and they just haven't been able to get there.
Right. Yeah. Like I said, I saw a brief glimpse of a headline, but I didn't look at the story, so hopefully I didn't spoil too much.
Okay. So what's interesting is that as we're recording this, you know, I had already written this episode, but I because this is such a breaking case, I actually went right before recording just to make sure there wasn't anything new that I'd missed. And there actually was a story that just came out today.
Oh, really? There's even more updates.
Yeah, with new information that I had not seen up to like an hour ago.
All right.
So yeah, so that's going to be toward the end, but we'll definitely get into that.
Cool.
But before we get started, just a little housekeeping. So last week at the end of the episode, I mentioned that we started a Patreon and I didn't give the link or anything. And apparently my sister couldn't find it, but a few other wonderful, ingenious people did. So thank you very much to Joanne H. and Brittany G. for your support and for apparently being smarter than my sister.
Oh, you mentioned your sister twice in one episode. She's going to freak out.
I know. So she always asks me to mention her. And now that I'm just basically dragging her, I wonder if she'll keep asking.
Probably not.
But in any case, for those of you who would like to check it out, the URL is patreon.com/ATTWGpod. All right. So back to Kristen. When we ended last week's episode, we were talking about the new sheriff in town, Sheriff Ian Parkinson. Soon after taking office, he executed 18 search warrants, submitted 37 items for DNA testing, recovered 140 additional items of evidence, and conducted 91 interviews.
That's a lot.
Yeah. During this time, billboards were also erected, and the Smart family kept fighting for justice. Paul Flores, throughout this entire thing, maintained his innocence, and his parents often railed against what they saw as basically just a smear campaign against their family. There was a man named Dennis Mahone who befriended the Smart family, and he did what he could to try to solve the case. And he was just some guy. He wasn't an investigator. He's just somebody who read about this case and was like, okay, I'm going to leave my life and move to California and find Kristen Smart. So when he was trying to solve this case, he decided to go about that by following Paul around and like posting Paul's addresses every time he moved on this website that he made. Unsurprisingly, the Flores family filed a restraining order against Mann. He was also arrested at least once for violating it. Like, he was dogged. Susan Flores, Paul's mother, was also picked up by police for assaulting Mann. So, like, this whole thing just got crazy. But at this particular instance, when police got there, they apparently told him that they were arresting Susan, but allegedly they just drove her around the block to where Dennis Mann couldn't see her and dropped her off, at which point she just walked home.
So it sounds like they were familiar with the situation and they were just trying to placate him.
Yeah, I think they just
were like sparing her.
Yeah, I don't think they really honestly wanted to get involved in any of it. Yeah, they're just like,
well, I'm sure. Yeah.
But the situation became so tense between the Flores and the Smart family that the Floreses even filed a harassment suit against the Smarts in 2005.
From their perspective, if he is innocent, then yeah, this has just been basically harassment.
Right. And that's exactly how they saw it. And so a lot of the coverage over the past couple decades has been that. It's been the Smart family saying, we know he had something to do with our daughter's disappearance. And the Flores saying, there is no proof of that. Like, you have been waging this campaign against us for decades and it needs to stop.
Yeah. Well, except for that whole, I plead the fifth.
27 times
in the lawsuit.
Yeah. Well, hey, according to the Constitution, that doesn't mean that you're guilty. It is a constitutional right for
sure.
A reason.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But let's take a look at Paul Flores and what he was up to before and after Kristen's disappearance. In December of 1995, Paul was apprehended by the San Luis Obispo police. He was either trying to look into an off-campus apartment or break in. So they weren't sure if it was a peeping Tom situation or a breaking and entering situation.
Gotcha.
Basically.
Yeah.
Police were presumably called by just someone who kind of saw him skulking around. Mm-hmm. And when officers got there, it appeared that Paul was drunk. Oh. So they basically just let him go. They just were like, okay, boys will be boys. They'll get drunk and...
Drunk college student.
Yeah, I guess. So they let him go. But then on March 27th of 1996, so 3 months after this, and just 2 months before Kristen's disappearance, female Cal Poly students filed a police report saying they had been receiving harassing phone calls for the past 6 weeks. The women suspected that the caller was Paul Flores because it was their balcony that he was caught trying to climb back in December.
Oh, so he was trying to climb a balcony. So it wasn't just him like skulking around outside of their apartment. He was like,
right,
legit so, trying to make entry.
But they don't know. That's the thing. He could have just literally been climbing up the balcony to look in.
Wow.
They don't know if he was legitimately trying to make entry or not.
Right.
But yeah, this apparently was not a first floor apartment.
Okay.
And then for the next 6 weeks, these girls kept on getting harassing phone calls, just like hang-ups and just stuff like that.
Yeah. Now, again, no evidence that that's him.
Well, yeah, right? Exactly. And so he was never arrested for this. But by May 24th, 1996, Paul had a reputation on campus. And it even garnered him the nickname Chester the Molester.
Ooh.
Yeah, because apparently he also had a habit of groping women at parties and things like that.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's interesting because there is one witness account to that party the night Kristen disappeared that said that they saw Paul and Kristen like in a hallway and like Paul was like kind of on top of her, but it didn't seem like anyone was in distress or anything like that. And it didn't even really strike them, that person, as weird at the time because it was a party and like whatever.
Yeah.
It was only obviously afterwards.
Yeah.
Everything happened.
Yeah.
He has this whole history of arrests before Kristen even goes anywhere. And keep in mind, the whole reason why police first saw that black eye that we mentioned was because right after Kristen's disappearance, he turned himself into police for a DUI. So he had already been like wanted on a DUI charge and he already had an issue with that. So he went in and that the first photo that we have of that black guy is from his mugshot.
Oh, I didn't.
For a completely unrelated incident.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that the last time. I don't know whether you mentioned
that. Yeah, no, I didn't specifically get into that last time, but that's what it was. So he was already exhibiting signs that he had problems with alcohol.
Right.
Because, yeah, he had a DUI arrest. You know, he had had this police report filed on him. The police said that he appeared drunk when they got there.
Right.
So, I mean, you're already seeing a pattern start to emerge here.
Yeah, not only of issues with alcohol, but also perversion.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, the maybe escalating.
Mm-hmm. After Kristen disappeared, like, I would have thought that because there's so much scrutiny on him very shortly after her disappearance, right? Like, it didn't take a long time for him to emerge as a suspect in this case.
Yeah. Well, that's why I find it so interesting that he turned himself in, like, for a DUI, like, right after
she went missing. And that was before he was questioned in her disappearance. Yeah. That was before anything happened. Right. Because remember, the case got off to a really slow start.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, so he did. And, you know, I guess was just trying, maybe that was his idea of, like, keeping his nose squeezed. He's like, I'll just go in, I'll take care of this, and then, like, go back under the radar. But after her disappearance, he didn't stop getting in trouble.
Mm.
I was able to find a partial arrest and conviction record for Paul. And between 1996 and 2016, he had at least 11 arrests. Most were for alcohol or drug-related offenses, including multiple DUIs. He even served time for one of those DUIs back in 2000. But a recent article in the LA Times says that police were looking at Flores for violent crimes back in 2013.
Okay.
Unrelated to Kristen. That year, Redondo Beach police presented prosecutors with a recommendation to prosecute Flores based on a rape allegation. However, prosecutors declined due to insufficient evidence.
Right. It's not a history of behavior, but it's escalating behavior from when he was in college.
Exactly.
Like all the same triggers, behavioral nuances that he was exhibiting early in his college career are now manifesting as more alcohol abuse, more drug use, and now more violent and possible sexual in nature too.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that is a good point, because up to this point, the only publicly known crimes that Paul had committed were these kind of like lower level issues. And it is, you're right, it is kind of showing a possible escalation. And he seems to be behaving more and more erratically as the years go on too. But soon, an even darker picture of Paul Flores would emerge. According to a report in the Daily Beast, in 2016, four women came forward and accused Flores of sexual assault. These alleged attacks dated all the way back to 1994, when Paul was a sophomore in high school.
Wow.
Yeah. The woman, who was a fellow student at the time, says that Paul Flores drugged and raped her and that he allegedly had an accomplice.
Jesus.
Yeah. The victim told the Daily Beast, quote, "The next thing I know is the cops telling me we can't do anything because Paul and his friend are saying she was drunk and it was consensual," end quote. Which, side note, again, if she's drunk, she can't consent.
Right.
That's it. The end.
Yeah.
So what we see here is that starting from an incredibly young age, Paul Flores was a sexual predator who had issues with substance use.
Right.
Over the past 25 plus years, he has had run-ins with many different police agencies, but other than that one stint in jail for that DUI, he's evaded any serious consequences until this month.
Hmm.
But Paul Flores had to have felt the walls closing in on him starting in 2020. Two trucks that had belonged to his family in 1996 were taken into evidence by police, and four different search warrants were executed in California and Washington State, including one on Paul Flores' home, which authorities said turned up, quote, items of interest, end quote.
Who keeps trucks for that long?
They didn't, I don't think. So honestly, I think they like literally tracked these trucks down, because Paul's truck, the one where he said that like that's how he got the black eye because he was replacing his stereo
that's right,
and punched himself, he sold that truck like a month later.
Huh.
Yeah, and that was viewed very suspiciously at the time, and that was another criticism against police, that they were not securing this evidence because they never searched it.
Well, that's interesting. So all these years later, I'm wondering what type of evidence they think that they're going to find out of it.
Yeah.
And from a defense attorney's standpoint, like, if they do find any evidence in there, like, that's going to be hard to prove that the evidence was in there when it belonged to Paul Flores.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at it analytically from a law enforcement perspective.
Well, no, and you're right. So I would be interested. I'm sure at some point we'll kind of find out more about these trucks. But I almost wonder if it's not so much what's in the trucks as just the fact that they got those trucks. Like, to me, it almost...
So you think it was like a psychological thing to try and put some more heat on them,
I kind of do.
That could be.
Yeah.
It could be. Either way, you know, if they do find some trace evidence of DNA... of her in the truck, if they can get that in front of a jury,
mm-hmm.
no matter how much the defense attorney is going to pick that apart, how else would it have gotten there?
Right. Well, and I'm sure they could also use it to just as a way of impeaching Paul, right? Because I'm sure during some interview at some point, he said, Kristen was never in my car. Like, I didn't know her.
Right.
She never went anywhere with me. So I'm positive that if they went back to some statement somewhere, you know, they could get him saying something like that. And then if she was then proven to be in that truck, then, you know, there you go. You're
right.
Showing that he's lying.
Yeah. Also, good on them for finding those trucks. Like, I wouldn't even know how to begin to track that down.
Yeah. 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 And I think that probably is a very interesting kind of side story.
Yeah.
In 2020, they got these trucks and they executed these four search warrants. But then in March of 2021, about a month ago, investigators searched Ruben Flores's Arroyo Grande house with cadaver dogs and ground penetrating radar.
Is this the house with the slab of concrete that was poured?
No, this is the other one.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So they have previously searched this house before as well, because this is the house where Paul like lived basically at the time of Kristen's disappearance.
Gotcha.
Because you remember that other house was like a rental property? Yeah, so it was not the one where they poured the concrete 2 days after Kristen's disappearance.
Mm.
On April 13th, 2021, Paul Flores was arrested for murder at his home in San Pedro, California.
Well, I guess they found something then, didn't they?
They sure did. And in a twist that was shocking to some, but not surprising to many who have been following this case over the years, Paul's father, Ruben Flores, was also arrested and charged with being an accessory after the fact.
Yep.
And that's why I almost had to laugh when in the first episode, yeah. when you're like, what, you think the parents are involved? I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
I do. The next day, Dan Dow, the San Luis Obispo County District Attorney, gave a press conference. In it, he said, quote, it is alleged that Mr. Flores caused the death of Kristen Smart while in the commission of or attempted rape, end quote. And that, quote, the allegation against Ruben is that he helped to conceal Kristen's body after the murder was committed, end quote.
So they found her?
No.
Okay.
As of this recording, Kristen Smart's body has not been found. But they found enough. So let's go back to like what prosecutors now are thinking, you know, as they arrested them on April 13th. This is their theory of the crime. Instead of Paul walking Kristen back to her dorm, he took her back to his, where he attempted to rape her. Kristen fought back, explaining the scratches and the black eye, but at some point she died. Whether it was by Paul deliberately killing her, or as some have theorized, as a result of a date rape drug that he had given her at the party. Maybe she asphyxiated or something like that. You know, you remember that Kristen, according to her friends, had not been drinking at all prior to that party. Witnesses were saying mixed things about whether or not she was drinking at the party.
Right.
Some said she wasn't drinking at all. Some said she was chugging vodka. But in any case, she was so impaired
that she couldn't walk home on her own.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So whether it was her voluntarily drinking a lot
or being given a date rape drug.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She was, by all accounts, incredibly impaired by the end of the night. So, you know, obviously the police and prosecutors aren't giving every single detail of what they think happened.
No, they can't at this point because there's potentially going to be a jury pool.
Exactly.
And so the less information that's out there at this point, as far as their investigation goes, the better.
Yeah. So they are giving the basics, which is that they think that Kristen was murdered in Paul's dorm. But they haven't said exactly like how they did
sure,
it. And I'm sure they're also waiting to find the body too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, there's definitely going to be some evidence there. I mean, at this point, if it was asphyxiation as the cause of death or something like that, there's not going to be evidence of that. But who knows what could be there? I mean,
you could rule things out, right?
Yes,
I mean, you could say, okay, there are no gunshots, like there are no, you could rule things out. Like,
You also said that on the initial search of his room, even after it had been cleaned, that the cadaver dogs hit on certain spots.
Yes.
So to me, that says that there were possibly bodily fluids.
Well, exactly. And that is what people theorize, because there was another part of one of his many stories over the years that I didn't get into last week, where he said that like he came home from the party and he got sick and went to the dorm's showers to like clean up. And so the theory there has been that he said that he got sick to cover up any potential evidence of vomit that would be found possibly in his room, because he was probably expecting his room to be searched before it was cleaned and sanitized by the university, right? And this whole thing came up because one of his dorm mates said that they saw him like in the showers in the middle of the night that night. So they're like, hey, what were you doing in the showers? Like, you said that you just went to your room and went to sleep. And then that's when he came up with this whole story I got sick, and then, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there could have been fluids such as vomit, you know, in there. And I think that's what has led people to speculate that asphyxiation could have been a cause of death. And years ago, I mean, this has been around for a while.
Yeah, yeah. And even at this point, it's all speculation.
Yeah, absolutely. But regardless of the manner of death, the theory goes that Paul then called Reuben that night, and Reuben assisted him in hiding the body and covered for his son all these years. And there was another quote that came from Susan, his mom, and apparently, one of Susan's coworkers came forward not too long after all of this happened and said that Susan got to work the next day and was like, yeah, I don't know. Reuben got a call and left the house like a bat out of hell. So what it sounds like and what people have thought is that like Paul called Reuben, Reuben came to help him. But, you know, Susan at that point did not know anything
what was
about
going
anything.
On. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's been a lot of debate over the years about whether or not Susan was involved, if she knew anything, if this is something Paul and Reuben were keeping from her, if she was in on it. I mean, you know, people have obviously had 25 years to speculate.
Yeah, sure.
So, so Sheriff Parkinson, of course, wouldn't reveal, you know, at that initial press conference what specific evidence led to the arrests. But as I mentioned, he did clarify that they had not yet located Kristen's body. He said, quote, we've got physical evidence. We have witness statements, things that, in our view, in the totality, have brought us to the point where we believe we can go forward and prosecute Mr. Flores for the murder of Kristen Smart, end quote.
It just makes me wonder what if they don't have her body, what else could they have?
Well, so this press conference and the arrests. So the arrests were on April 13th. The press conference was the next day. Right now, we are recording this on April 26th. And in those 12 days, a lot more information has come out.
Okay.
So Paul was arrested and held without bail while Ruben was booked and given a $250,000 bond. The father and son appeared in court on April 15th, but declined to enter pleas. That day, the Smart family said in a statement, quote, "After nearly 25 years of waiting, today's delay in the arraignment process was not unexpected or surprising. Make no mistake, we have begun the final quest to bring justice for Kristen. We know we are in good hands with the San Luis Obispo County District Attorney's Office, and we will wait patiently for the process to commence," end quote. And at this press conference, the DA also asked for the public to come forward with any other crimes that Paul Flores may have committed over the years. The next day, LAPD Captain Jonathan Tippett, who is head of their robbery homicide division, told reporters that Paul is under investigation for two separate sexual assaults, one of which was that 2013 assault that I mentioned earlier that prosecutors declined to bring charges because of lack of evidence.
Right.
So, I mean, anyway, it really seems like the floodgates are opening in multiple jurisdictions.
Even if they don't prosecute those other crimes, that they're probably going to be using those people as character witnesses,
right?
Building the history of Paul, basically.
Yeah, yeah, a nearly 30-year history of sexual attacks.
Yeah.
On April 19th, 2021, Paul and Ruben Flores were arraigned. Paul's attorney asked for bail, saying in his filing papers that, quote, "Mr. Flores does not pose a risk to public safety and is not a flight risk," end quote.
I mean, sure, as long as you're not a female that he wants to drug.
I mean, I couldn't even get
through.
Then
I guess the public is safe in that regard.
I couldn't even get through reading that. And this lawyer, like, apparently typed that up and was like, yes, this is it. This is.
Yeah.
This seems like it'll work. Like, I don't know. I mean, how could you say that with a straight face, honestly?
Well, I guess that's their job.
Yeah. So, you know. So I watched that hearing live, the one on April 19th. And in it, the judge stated that Paul Flores, quote, "has not remained crime free," end quote, since the alleged murder. So he is, in fact, a danger to the public.
Right.
And again, like, even if you're saying, okay, he hasn't been tried for any of these sexual offenses, he has had multiple DUI arrests.
Right.
He has served jail time for DUIs. And that in and of itself
is a danger to the public.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Right. So leave all of the sex and the murder out of it.
Right.
Like, he is literally a danger to the public.
Yeah. And at that point, it doesn't matter whether you think he's a flight risk or not.
Right.
If he's a danger to the public, then he's a danger to the public.
Yeah. But the judge does also consider him to be a flight risk. So he denied bail once again at that April 19th hearing. Ruben Flores's attorney brought up the fact that Ruben is 80, has never been arrested for anything. He's like a war veteran. He has multiple health problems. He just had like heart surgery recently. And he doesn't even have a passport. So the judge agreed to review Ruben's bail, which was set at that point for $250,000, on April 21st, and then set it at something that he can afford. And so what that entailed was basically they filled out an asset form, and then they had this hearing. And so he was going to, he was basically saying, like, listen, I'm going to let you out on bail. $250,000 is what the prosecutors want, but we're going to make it something attainable for you financially.
Yeah, yeah. What can you put up as collateral?
Right.
Yeah.
Both Paul and Ruben's lawyers also pushed for a quick preliminary hearing, but the prosecutor, Christopher Pavrell, warned them that the amount of discovery in this case is so substantial that they won't be able to get through it nearly as quickly as they seem to think. And it was really funny because the lawyers, both Paul and Ruben's lawyers, were like, oh, yeah, no, like, let's get this going. And several times the prosecutor's like, okay, we can set this date all you want, but like literally you are not going to be able to physically read all of this information that we're going to dump on you.
Right. Like, so that's a miscalculation on their part, because they probably don't realize the level of evidence that they have against them.
Yeah.
Their thought process at that point, as from a defense attorney standpoint, is probably, let's get it going fast before they find anything else,
mm-hmm.
i.e. before they actually find Kristen's body.
Yeah, and you're probably right. Anyway, the arraignment ended with a preliminary hearing set for May 17th, with the preliminary hearing tentatively set for July 6th. So anyway, so basically Ruben and Paul's attorneys wanted this preliminary hearing set for July 6th. And that was like, and then the DA was like, there's absolutely no way. So they compromised and they're like, let's meet back in May and just see how far you've gotten.
Okay. Okay.
So then on Wednesday, April 21st, Ruben Flores had another hearing, which I mentioned, this bail hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And at this one, Flores' bail was reduced from $250,000 to $50,000, and he was released that night. So right now, he is out of jail, and he is under electronic monitoring and has been instructed not to leave the county.
Right.
So Ruben Flores is out. Paul Flores was very rapidly denied bail and is still sitting in jail. During the arraignment, when the issue of Ruben Flores being a feeble old man who has never been arrested for a crime was being discussed, the DA did say that he believed bail should be high because Ruben helped dispose of Kristen's body, and there was a chance that he would continue to cover up this murder if he were released.
Right.
However, since, you know, this wasn't an evidentiary hearing, the judge basically had to go with like the solid facts, right?
Yeah.
And the solid facts were that Ruben is not a criminal in the eyes of the law. And so there was no legal basis for him to either deny bail or to keep the bail at a high amount that Ruben would not be able to afford.
Right.
Yeah. Effectively denying him bail, right?
Yeah.
So the whole thing was that because of the law that this whole bail hearing was based on, they really had to let him out.
Right. But they are mitigating his chance of fleeing with the ankle monitor.
Right. Exactly. That was the judge's kind of capitulation mm-hmm. to the DA, who was like, listen, this whole thing is about him covering up this crime. And if we just let him go, like, what's going to stop him from right. continuing to cover it up? And so I think that was the judge's way of like, okay, I can't deny him bail based on this, but you have a point. We'll stick an ankle monitor on him.
Yeah. Now the only concern is if her body is at his house still mm-hmm. somewhere and somehow the police missed it, then the DA is right, because then he could still tamper with evidence.
Yeah. Well, funny you mentioned that. The Smart family was not about to let the Ruben Flores issue go. And they absolutely were not going to let Ruben Flores and his attorney continue to paint this picture of a feeble old man who's just caught up in something, mm-hmm. you know, that his son did. They were ready to go. Less than 24 hours after Ruben Flores was released on bail, the Smart family filed a civil suit against him, accusing Paul Flores' father of intentional infliction of emotional distress.
Hmm.
I've linked out the entire 9-page suit on our blog, but here are some highlights. And this is directly from the suit. Quote, on or about February 9th, 2020, defendant Ruben Flores removed the remains of Kristen Smart from its location, which, on information and belief, were located at 710 White Court, Arroyo Grande. Two additional individuals, who will be later named as defendants in this action, participated with defendant Ruben Flores in the removal of the remains of Kristen Smart from the location at 710 White Court, Arroyo Grande, California, end quote.
Hmm.
This was Ruben's house, and this is the house where they found the newspaper clippings shortly after Kristen's disappearance.
Uh-huh.
And those newspaper clippings, which is interesting because when I was initially researching that, I couldn't find the specifics. Apparently, some were found under Paul's bed, and some were found in Ruben's dresser.
Mm. So it's interesting that they pursued that because that tends to show their hand a little bit to the public eye.
Yeah. So this, again, is a civil suit filed by the Smart family. But I think they did. I think they really wanted to come out hard and make it public just to make it absolutely clear that Ruben Flores is an active participant in this crime.
Right.
And he's an ongoing participant in this crime. And I think they absolutely want to show their hand because, honestly, they want to get Kristen's body because at this moment, they don't have it.
Yeah.
So I think they're trying everything they can to put pressure on both of them to see if they can make some sort of deal or do something.
Yeah,
right?
I can see that.
Because this whole suit, the intentional infliction of emotional distress, the whole basis of this is that Ruben hid the body and then last year moved the body. And in those two actions, they have prevented the Smart family from laying their daughter to rest.
Right. Yeah. No, I understand.
And now, they're saying their theory is that, you know, when he moved her body last year, that she might not be in one place.
Right.
So now they're saying, listen, one, you've kept our daughter from us for 25 years. Two, you've desecrated her body. Mm-hmm. And three, she might be in multiple places. Right. Yeah. And so that, from the Smart's perspective, like they want that to be public. They want to make sure that everybody knows that Ruben Flores is in this and not just the dad as somebody who did a bad thing.
Right.
So yeah, so now everything's coming together because we have these four search warrants executed last year in early 2020, and they were sealed. All authorities would say about them was like the general locations and that they were, quote, limited in scope. Mm-hmm. But, you know, nothing about what they found, what they didn't find, whatever. But these searches from last year were enough to spook the Flores family because the lawsuit alleges that this search of Ruben's home in 2020 was the inciting factor that led him to dig up Kristen's body, which was underneath the deck at his home, and then move it to an undisclosed location. And the way, and we'll have pictures of his home on the blog as well, but the way his deck is that it's a raised deck. So there's a bunch of space underneath the deck, and then there's lattice work surrounding the deck. And so they said that Kristen was buried underneath the deck behind the lattice work. So if you're thinking now, like, wow, that seems like a lot for a feeble 80-year-old man to accomplish by himself.
Well, the lawsuit named two other
individuals. So. They did. So the lawsuit, interestingly, didn't name his accomplices. While you may be able to guess maybe who one is, like, you will definitely not guess who they both are.
Okay. Paul, obviously.
No. Ruben Flores's alleged 2020 accomplices weren't named in the suit, like I mentioned, but Jim Murphy, the lawyer who has represented the Smart family since 1997, told the San Luis Obispo Tribune that the two people are Susan Flores, Paul's mother, and her boyfriend, Mike McConville. They apparently all worked together under the cover of night to dig up Kristen's body and move it to an undisclosed location.
Wow.
Yeah, and like,
what evidence do they have?
Well, they're not giving that up, obviously.
They obviously have enough if they feel comfortable talking about it. Yeah. Good God, what did they find to implicate all three of them?
We're both children of divorce, and my parents have a really good relationship, and like my stepmom and my mom get along really well.
Not that well.
Right? Like, I definitely cannot picture the two of them digging up a body with my dad. So yeah, so again, the lawsuit didn't state where they believe Kristen ended up, but according to an article on CalCoastNews.com that came out today, the day we are recording this episode, there are several people who strongly believe that they know exactly where Kristen's body is.
Okay. And who are these people that...
These people are Paul Flores's neighbors.
Oh.
Several of Paul's neighbors were interviewed for this article, And they said that they became suspicious when Paul, who had lived in this house in Los Angeles County for like 10 years, he had just left his backyard overgrown and terrible. Like he was that neighbor, you know, drove everybody nuts. Well, he started clearing out his backyard in 2019, in late 2019. Then he dug a large hole in the back corner. A neighbor who wished to remain anonymous alleges that a few weeks later, he saw Paul take something wrapped in a black blanket from the trunk of his car and bury it in that hole. He then covered the hole with plywood. So the neighbor, who I'm assuming from reading this just has balls of steel, actually asked Paul like the next day what he buried in the hole in his yard in the middle of the night. And Paul said that it was his dog who had died. But Paul didn't have a dog.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and it gets even crazier. So then he apparently built a wooden frame around the hole and put rebar inside of the hole. He then rented a cement mixer.
Okay, here we go.
And covered it in concrete. And then he put bricks over the concrete. And then he started to put a second layer of bricks over the bricks. But he was arrested before he could finish.
I get that they were moving her body out of that house where the search warrant had been executed.
Mm-hmm.
Why were they dumb enough to move her to Paul's house? They know that Paul's the main suspect.
Yeah, I don't know. And again, none of this has been proven. We have no actual real idea.
Sure, you're right.
But,
we don't.
You know, the neighbors are like, hey, here's a weird thing that's been going on for several months.
Yeah.
I don't know. But the theory is basically that shortly after police searched his home in 2020, Ruben told Paul that they had to move the body. And Paul began prepping his own yard and then eventually buried Kristen there. When police returned to Ruben's house in March, you asked like what they had if they didn't have Kristen's body. They did this other search and they used ground penetrating radar and determined that a body had been under the deck and had been recently moved. When the Floreses were arrested, police said that they hadn't discovered the body, but they were relatively sure that they knew where it was. But based on this article, I don't know where they think that her body is, honestly, because if these neighbors are correct and she is in Paul's backyard, it does not appear that since April 13th, when Paul was arrested, that his home has been treated as a crime scene at all.
Hmm.
Neighbors report that since Paul Flores' arrest, people have just been in and out of the house. Doors have been open. And there even appeared to be a squatter living inside for several days.
Interesting.
But, I mean, I guess it does appear that the bricks, concrete, rebar, and plywood are still intact. And so hopefully that will be excavated soon. But, yeah, they said that the house has been vacant and it's just been, you know, willy-nilly people going in and out.
Hmm.
I mentioned in the last episode that authorities are looking for possible victims of Paul Flores to come forward. CNN reported that San Luis Obispo County Deputy District Attorney Christopher Pavrell said, quote, "Dozens of women have recounted Paul Flores' sexual assaults and predatory behavior that document his 25 years as a serial rapist," end quote. So that's where we are right now. So, okay, as somebody who did not know about this story at all, so this is all like new information for you. You went on the whole roller coaster. Like, what are your thoughts?
I don't understand how she was missed, because they searched Ruben's house before, right?
Yes, but they never dug anything up. And I do not believe up until that point that they had ground penetrating radar at that location. I think they only used it
at the other house where the concrete had been poured.
Mm-hmm.
again, I just think that I know I said it in the last episode, but I feel like it was just a mismanaged case from the start, because it nobody wanted to take control or take lead on the investigation. Like, I don't understand how you missed that. Okay, if you don't have ground penetrating radar, we know there are cadaver dogs. Mm-hmm. Did they bring dogs into Ruben's house? Search the property? I mean, like, I just don't understand how she could have been missed if they had actually searched the house properly.
Yeah, and what's so
and the property
heartbreaking
obviously.
About it is that, you know, they had the concrete in the other Arroyo Grande home. They have this concrete and bricks and rebar and whatnot in Paul Flores's home currently. This house had nothing. If this, yeah. And it seems, because again, they did say they found physical evidence that Kristen was buried there. She wasn't buried under concrete. She right. wasn't inaccessible.
Right.
She wasn't in a steel drum. Like, you know what I mean? She wasn't. And because I saw pictures.
And clearly, the other two people that were named are, they may not be 80, but they must be up there in age.
Yeah.
Right? So you have these three elderly people digging her body up. It couldn't have been buried that deep.
I saw pictures of the technician using the ground penetrating radar underneath the deck, and it looks like literally any deck you've ever seen in your entire life.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing reinforced. There's nothing inaccessible. There's nothing special about it at all.
Yeah.
And that was the shocking thing to me. I'm like, that is where she was this whole time? Just right there?
Yeah. I do not understand how she could have been missed on that initial search.
Yeah. And it, I mean, just
unless she wasn't there and she had been moved, she was somewhere else and then moved back onto the property.
Exactly. And that's what I find interesting, because yeah, there is nothing, as far as I know, that indicates that she was there for the entire 25 years.
Right.
So she could have been moved multiple times over the years.
Yeah.
All they could say was that she was recently there.
Yeah.
But is not there currently. I mean.
So when did the neighbor come forward again?
What, about Paul's neighbor?
Paul's neighbor about the brick and.
That article. So they've been obviously reporting on this and researching this article, but the article itself came out today.
Okay. So maybe the reason why they, although I can't imagine why they wouldn't have executed a search warrant on Paul's house anyway, but
yeah. And they did, because Paul's house was one of the four search warrants from 2020.
But then she was moved afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we're just waiting for the slow wheels of justice to get the search warrant authorized for the backyard in Paul's house.
Well, that's what I'm assuming. However, I do find it incredibly concerning that these neighbors are saying that this house is completely unsecured.
Yeah.
When I started reading that article and these neighbors are like, yeah, no, I'm pretty sure she's in the backyard. I said, oh, okay, well, that's why the police said we don't have her body, but we think that we know where she is. And I said, I was reading the article. I'm like, this makes sense. I get it. And then I got to the end where they're like, oh, and a squatter was living in there. And, you know, and I didn't mention this earlier, but so at the time when the neighbor confronted Paul about burying something in the backyard, and he said it was my dog, and Paul didn't have a dog. He apparently got a couple of dogs after that. Like two pit bulls, and one was like a mom and her baby, and then the baby died. And then he got another pit bull that the neighbor said was vicious. And Paul was just one of those, you know, assholes who would just keep his dogs outside in the yard like all day.
Yeah.
After his arrest on the 13th, the sheriff's deputies just left the dogs in the backyard. So then the reporter who wrote this was like, you know, they asked the sheriff's department about that. And they said that they had been told that a relative was going to come for the dogs. Relative never came for the dogs. The dogs stayed there. The neighbors started like throwing food over the fence for the dogs.
Yeah.
And then eventually the dogs, quote, broke out of the backyard, and then a neighbor took them home. But I mean, obviously, like, neighbors finally went in and stole the dogs to save them.
Sure.
But my point isn't about the dogs. My point is that the sheriff's department, for some reason, left this so unsecured that there were dogs running around the backyard for days or a week, you know?
Why wouldn't they just call animal control?
I don't know. I mean, again, they said that a relative was coming to take care of the dogs, but still, like, I just don't understand why you wouldn't make sure that the animals were removed from the property that day, just in case, like, they started messing with any potential evidence.
Right.
You know, I'm not even talking about it from a dog welfare perspective.
Right. Yeah. So I don't understand why they wouldn't secure his house as a secondary crime scene right away.
Exactly.
I mean, if they have the evidence that her body had been moved, you know, and he had been living in this house for 10 plus years.
Mm-hmm. And they had previously searched the house, so they had reason to believe that there were things happening.
Yeah,
so
why wouldn't they secure that as a crime scene?
I don't know. And so my only hope is, because this article was based on anonymous neighbors and literally just came out today, I'm hoping that
we're missing something.
Yeah, this is just like a next door post gone horribly wrong. And like, this isn't actually the case. It's just a bunch of like crazy neighbors saying stuff.
And maybe the squatter was actually like a cop sitting in the house.
Right. So I'm hoping that that's
okay. So hopefully we're wrong on that.
And, yes.
You know, that will all get sussed out.
Yeah. So as of right now, like I said, we're at April 26th, 2021. The preliminary hearing is about 3 weeks away, where both sides are going to kind of see where they are in terms of discovery. And then the preliminary hearing is set for July 6th. I'm sure that the prosecution is trying to find Kristen as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Like you said before.
But there are legitimate legal
jumps
that they have to go through to secure everything.
But, you know, the point is that over the past 2 weeks, since the Floreses have been arrested, there has just been new big news coming out of this case, you know, every day almost.
Yeah.
So basically what we're going to do is, you know, this is just the end of the bonus episodes for now, because we are completely caught up to date, but we'll pop back in every now and again with just like short updates, because, you know, I think we've just got to kind of follow this case and see what happens. My guess is they're really, really going to lean on these guys and try to get them to make a deal.
Yeah. I think what they're probably going to do is they're probably going to try and lean on
Ruben.
Mm-hmm. Citing his age and possible health concerns, and i.e. if you take this to trial, you're going to die in prison.
Well, right. And that was Ruben's lawyer's big argument against this $250,000 bond.
Right.
Is that, you know, my client is insanely old, and if he can't afford to get out on bond, there is a very good chance
that he might die awaiting
trial. Yeah, because like the maximum sentence for his charge is like 3 years or something like that. It's something that where he could very easily die in jail awaiting trial.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, and serve out more time in jail awaiting trial than he would if he were convicted tomorrow, basically.
Right. So it sounds to me like they're going to lean heavy on those three.
Mm-hmm.
Paul's father, stepdad, and mother.
Not real stepdad.
Not stepdad.
Mom's boyfriend.
Mom's boyfriend. Whatever. So they're going to lean heavy on those three to flip on Paul. Mm-hmm. And more realistically than anything, I think given the fact that this has been going on for 20 plus years, mom's boyfriend's probably going to flip.
I would assume so, right? But yeah. I also would have assumed that mom's boyfriend would have helped in general. I mean, so who knows?
I mean, yeah, I agree with you, but he did, so that's...
Allegedly.
So that's probably where they're going to go as far as who they're going to lean on the heaviest.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And maybe he didn't have anything to do with it. And maybe they just kind of threw him in there as another pressure tactic of like, hey, now you're facing this civil suit.
Right.
So if you...
We can take that off the table.
Yeah, like maybe if you give us information and clear yourself, like maybe he actually didn't help that night.
Yeah.
You know, if you give us information, clear yourself, tell us who actually moved, then, you know, the civil suit goes away. Any potential criminal charges... go away.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we will make sure to keep you completely up to date as this progresses. Denise Smart has been missing since May 25th, 1996. She was last seen on the campus of California Polytechnic State University in the company of Paul Flores. Kristen was 19 years old at the time of her disappearance. She's believed to be deceased. Paul Flores and his father, Ruben Flores, will stand trial for her murder. Authorities ask that if you have any information about Kristen's case or any other crimes that Paul Flores may have been involved in, that you contact the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department at 805-781-4500 or the FBI's Los Angeles office at 805-934-2444. You can see all of the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Dethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
Okay, this is not going to be a regular segment, but we're a little bit behind on our recording schedule because my dog, Buckley, has been sick, and unfortunately, we did have to have her put down this past Thursday. So I wrote a little something about her, and, you know, listen, if I have a podcast and I have a microphone, I might as well use it to indulge myself and talk about my dog, who was with me for nearly 18 years. So if you don't want to hear my dog story, the episode's over. You've gotten here, we're done, it's fine. But for those of you who want to hear about Buckley, you can stick around for the next few minutes. A funny thing I've noticed over the past several years is that any time I'm talking with someone who I haven't seen in a long time and I mention my dog Buckley, they always say basically the same thing. Wait, Buckley? She's still alive? My answer was always yes, until today when the answer is sadly, inconceivably, no. Now, inconceivably is a ridiculous thing to say about a dog who is nearly 18 years old. Yet I have to be completely honest. Somewhere around year 15, I began to believe that she may just be immortal. After all, she had survived many things that by all rights should have killed her. Running away from her original home and getting into God knows what, darting out into the street countless times, eating a small box of Godiva truffles, eating a large box of Godiva truffles, eating an entire corn cob, eating tinfoil, eating an innumerable amount of chicken bones off of New York City streets, and having her throat nearly ripped out by a huge dog while she was defending our other dog, Lola, who is a boxer mix and much bigger and fiercer than she was. There was also the time about 5 years ago when her back legs randomly stopped working and we thought it was the end, only to have the vet just give her a pill and see her literally bounce back a day later, better than ever. I rescued Buckley from the Augusta County Animal Shelter in February of 2004. I had recently graduated college and had my first real job and home. I was living alone in Stanton, Virginia and starting my life, though I didn't exactly know what that entailed. My sister and her boyfriend had recently gotten a dog and they seemed happy. It also seemed like a proper adult thing to do, even though I had never had a dog and knew literally nothing about how to take care of them. I went to the shelter like so many suckers before me, just to look, when I saw this small, eager-eyed beagle with the sweetest face. I asked if I could see her out of her kennel, and she immediately jumped into my lap. She lived with me from that point on. I'll spare you the details of her foibles with housebreaking and all of the books, shoes, and coffee tables she ate. Let's just say I could have trained her better. We moved out of that house a year later and started on our adventure that would span somewhere around 14 moves. Anytime I ended up in a new place, whether or not I knew anyone, I would always at least have her. She was my constant companion over the years. She saw every single major life event that has happened between my college graduation and now. She was there 12 years ago when I brought my first baby home from the hospital, and she was there 3 years ago when I brought home my second. She was not impressed either time. It's good that Buckley was fixed early because she didn't have much of a maternal instinct, but she did tolerate the kids and became a fan when they started eating solid food, as they were then excellent marks for her food thievery. After they learned to hold on to their food better, she would move on to other pursuits like sleeping and angry peeing if we were gone too long. Every person I dated as an adult had to deal with Buckley in one capacity or another, and every relationship I had inevitably involved a fight in which I yelled, "Buckley was here before you and she'll be here after you're gone." It was true every time. Ethan was actually the only one I never said that to, and reader, I married him. Ethan was amazing at caring for Buckley in her last few years. As she became incontinent, he would start each day by cleaning up her pee. He was the one who gave her medicine and figured out the best food for her old lady tummy. And this week, when it became clear that it was Buckley's time to go, he was the one who scheduled the appointment when I couldn't bring myself to do it. We had laps of love come to our home this morning. We fed her some of her favorite treats before the appointment. Cheese, peanut butter pretzels, and a chocolate truffle just for old time's sake. She was completely peaceful when she went, but honestly, even as the vet was injecting her with the medication that would stop her heart, I still gave her a 25% chance of survival. Goodbye, Buckley. Thank you for keeping me company for the last 17 years. I had just turned 23 when I got you, and I've recently turned 40. Though my life took a ton of twists and turns over that time, I feel like I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be now, and you helped me get here. I will always be grateful.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to have a podcast host as your realtor? No, of course you haven't. That would be insane. Hey, it's Kona here to tell you that we can make that insanity happen because I actually am a realtor based in Northern Virginia. So if you happen to live in the area, I can help you directly, but I can also help anyone around the world achieve your real estate goals because I have an amazing referral network that I work with and I help people everywhere. I also offer special incentives to veterans, to active military members, to AARP members, and so many more people. So if you are interested in buying, selling, renting, whatever it may be, all you need to do is go to my website, callkona.com, and we can connect. And I promise I will also give you all of the tea and all of the background info on this podcast if you want to. So again, that's callkona.com. If you need real estate. So let's get back to the episode.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.